Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to Season 3 of Queer I Am, the podcast, live and unscripted. I am so excited to share this with you. The podcast has been recorded over 8 weeks in front of a live audience at Arco Baleno, an inclusive queer space in the heart of Kemp Town, Brighton. I am so proud to be partnering with Arco Baleno and cannot thank Luciana, Nick and the whole team there enough for their support and generosity in the making of this season of the podcast. If you haven't been there before, please check it out. Not only do they have an incredible Maltese menu for you to explore, but they also have a range of cocktails, drinks and a regular schedule of entertainment for you to enjoy. The podcast is also being supported by their production company, Across Rainbows Productions, and film for YouTube. So if you didn't get to come to one of the live shows, you can find these videos at your leisure on the Across Rainbows YouTube channel. Make sure you subscribe, give the videos a like, and leave any comments you may have. We also had several authors participate in the shows, and Kemp Town Bookshop were on hand to sell signed books by the authors. You can check out this beautiful bookshop in the heart of Brighton, but make sure you take your credit card because you will not leave empty-handed. The shows feature a panel of guests where we'll be talking all things queer, and an audience Q&A too, an opportunity for everyone to get involved in the conversation. In this episode, we'll be discussing queer relationships. The show features author Brian Moriarty, psychosexual and relationship psychotherapist and author Silver Nevis, personal trainer and drag performer Harry Casella, aka Mary O'Cart, and Olga Stefana, an author, feminist, and campaigner. I hope you enjoy the show. So whatever you're up to, this is your time to settle down, relax, and enjoy the podcast. Welcome to Queer I Am. Okay, so welcome everyone to Queer I Am, the podcast, live and unscripted, episode number 6. And we're talking about queer relationships, which is very exciting. So really interesting conversation and safe space. We've got an audience Q&A after the interval. So if anyone would like to ask a question, you can obviously do so. We always say it's a safe space. Just be respectful and, you know, the usual stuff, really. You know, just kind of ask what you want to ask, but we want to make sure that everyone can contribute to the conversation as well as the panel, the audience as well. So please get your questions ready. We'll have an interval after about an hour. I'm going to be selling books tonight, and I've used the card machine a couple of times. It was very exciting. So if anyone would like to use buy a book, please come and buy them, because I'll get a chance to use those once again, which is very exciting. So I have some amazing guests, which I'm so excited to speak with today. So please can I introduce Harry Casella, a.k.a. Mary O'Cart.
Hello.
Big round of applause, please.
Thank you.
Fabulous author Brian Moriarty.
Hello.
Big round of applause. Now, this is a title and a half that I've had to write down and I'm going to have to pronounce. So, psychosexual and relationship psychotherapist and author Silver Nevis. I got it right. That was good. And author, feminist, activist, Ugla Stefania.
Very good.
I got it right too?
Yes,
yay,
good.
We're winning. So we always do this when we start the show. I ask, and you'll know this, Harry, from our previous conversation. So if you had to choose a song to reflect your mood right now as a little icebreaker, what would your song be? And I'm going to start with you, Harry.
Why'd you have to start with me?
Can everyone hear everyone okay? Can you hear Harry?
I'm still standing.
Oh, bit of Elton.
Bit of Elton.
Nice. Is that because you're still hanging from the weekend or...?
No, not at all. Not at all. Yes, yes, very much so. Very much so.
Amazing. Brian?
I think mine is It's All Coming Back to Me Now by Celine Dion.
Oh, nice. Sorry, I'm just pointing
out. Was that an eye roll?
No, yeah, I hate Celine Dion.
But the spirit of it, I haven't been in Brighton in years and I'm getting a real Proustian rush as I walk through the streets.
Oh, nice. Lovely. How long has it been since you've been here?
Like 4 or 5 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So pre-lockdown.
Yeah, it was for a show I was performing at the Brighton Fringe. So okay. I've a real feeling of guilt that I'm not flyering someone and telling them to come see my show.
Amazing. Silva?
I'm going to go modern and I'm going to go padam padam because oh. I feel the love right now.
Can everyone hear everyone okay? Can you hear? Yeah. Is it maybe just... I've only got one ear, so it's probably why I can't hear everyone okay, but we'll go with it. It's fine. Olga?
I think I would probably say like Blue Jeans with Lana Del Rey because I'm just in a summery kind of mood, putting on jeans and a shirt.
Is it quite... Because she's quite moody with her music.
She is quite moody. I like her because she's very moody because I'm quite moody. So she's a kindred spirit.
So we'll go with it. Okay, so we're talking about relationships. And when I was writing this today, I was thinking about this because when we talk about relationships, we think romantic. But actually, relationships take many different forms. So I would like to understand if you can all define what a relationship means to you. And it doesn't have to be a specific type. It can be... is what you think about relationships. Let's start with you, Brian, because you look deep in thought. So you're on the spot.
That is my look of utter bafflement. I can't think of anything that's more specific or interesting than like a bond that's formed between two people and the strength or the weight of that bond varying between relationship and relationship.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all I have for you now, but that's what you get for coming to me first, I suppose.
Well, it's a good answer. Ugla, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, this is very loud now. Oh, I think relationships can be very different things, as you were saying. It doesn't have to be a loving relationship. It can also be a hatred relationship. But I think, you know, for the purpose of this, we're probably more focusing on the positive ones. And I think, as you were saying about queer people needing to have certain relationships, you know, we have to sometimes find our own families, mm-hmm. and that's relationships we create because we don't have that from our families or from our loved ones. So I think, yeah, as queer people,
it's like you've read my cards, because my next question
well
is,
maybe I was having a peek.
Logical versus biological and, you know, chosen family. So again, that's something that over recent years I've become more aware of and been reading more about. So I mean, you've touched upon that really nicely, actually. I mean, that's really important, isn't it, within our community?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to have a good relationship with my family, but, you know, for the purposes of other fulfillments in my life, like, my family doesn't understand me in the same way as my queer friends do. So I do form a family there. And, you know, for people who don't have that family at all, having those families is probably even more important to have. So, yeah, I think it's, you know... Biology in terms of family doesn't mean anything to me, really. It's more about people and the role they play in your life rather than whether they're biologically related
day-to-day.
To you.
Yeah, completely. Do you all agree? What was your thoughts on chosen family? Any other thoughts to have on that one?
No, absolutely. I agree. And I think it's true that the family of choice is so important for us all. And I think I'm hoping that now parents are a bit more open-minded. And so hopefully less children now are going to be experiencing some of the things that people in my generation experienced, where families just did not understand or know. And the experience of love is... The word love is interesting because a lot of parents, there's no parents that will say, I don't love my child. But actually, I think a lot of the time, what we experience as queer people is that parents love us as long as we are like they want us to be. And then suddenly love disappears when we are different from what they want us to be. So, yes. Yeah. I'm hoping it's changing, but still now we're still hearing people just being ostracized and pushed away from their family just because they're not heterosexual or monogamous or cisgender. And that's really sad.
Yeah, that's something we've got to keep speaking about, I think, isn't it?
Yes, so family of choice is so important. And, you know, places like the Pride flag is a beacon of place that can be home for some of us. So that's really important.
Did you all have your tribe when you came out and kind of identified whether it was gender or sexuality, or was it something you found over time and became more comfortable with, do you think?
I would say that I found mine, but it's shifted. So, like, I found, I guess I came out when I was, like, 18, and I'm now only 19. But I had them, like, the initial people that were around. And then, obviously, as you get older, that changes. You find out more about yourself, and it shifts. So I would say that initially, yes, I did have a tribe, but that has now shifted to adopt. I would say after coming to, like, Brighton and being exposed to a bigger, queerer community, your horizons expand, right? So you start to meet different people, and suddenly people that you never would have thought would be in your chosen family or in your tribe are now suddenly there because you just didn't meet them in the first place, and now you have. So, yeah, I had an initial set, we'll call it, and then it's expanded since then as I've grown up and travelled and moved.
Yeah. What about you, Brian?
Yeah, kind of similar. I was thinking a sort of similar thing of after coming out, you kind of find, a tribe's a really good word for it. Like that, in my experience, though, was often a sort of, as a queer person, sort of people cheering you from the sidelines, as it were. Like, allies, I suppose. And that is, you know, for me was really important and really, really crucial, particularly at that point in your life. And then you reach other points where you're like, oh no, these are like, it's not so much cheering from the sidelines anymore as sort of playing the same match. I'm not very good at sports, but you know, like sort of being on the same team.
Yes.
Their teams, right? And so that kind of difference, that evolution of, you know, who you see as that kind of, you know, group.
I mean, I think, you know, I've found more people that I have commonality with since moving to Brighton. But before that, when I lived in my old town, I had friends that I'd known for years and years. And I think those friendships were more habit than truly understanding each other and our lives. So I would have a conversation with someone and they'd go, oh, that's great. And then it would be moved on to their children or something else that was kind of going on in their world. Whereas I think I've definitely felt since moving here, having different conversations with people, you just feel a bit more heard and listened to and people relate to you. I think that's that. You know, it's something we all kind of need, really, as queer people, isn't it? Yeah.
I come from a really, really rural town in Iceland, which only has like 360,000 people. So it's already quite small enough. Mm. And I lived in a farm in the middle of nowhere. So my best friends were like the sheep and the cows and the cats and all that stuff. So coming out as a queer person there was just, you know, there was no one there. They didn't have any sort of people to be friends or community to speak of, except, you know, telling my cats or whatever. So it was just quite.
They just nodded and purred.
It was just a bit funny. I had like an entourage of animals following me around everywhere I went. I felt like one of those Disney princesses. But no one knew I was really a princess.
How long was it before you moved to Brighton?
I only moved to Brighton about 7 years ago.
Okay.
But before that, I lived in Reykjavik in Iceland, which is the capital. Uh-huh. And there is a community there. So I did find my community there, but it wasn't until I moved there when I was about 20.
Okay.
But I came out around 17 or so, but I had lived in a smaller community. So I didn't really have a community to speak of. But when I moved to Reykjavik, that did change. And I did find that group in my tribe and all that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's amazing. I mean, I think that one thing we're always told, and I definitely relate to this growing up, it's like you have ideals around relationships. So it's, you know, you meet someone, you fall in love, you get married, you buy a house, you're monogamous, all of that shit. And, it can work, don't get me wrong. And it's, you know, it's...
Great if it works for you.
How do you really feel? But I think we are... You know, this message is really driven to us, isn't it? And then anything that you do different to that, you almost feel a bit apologetic. Now, I think, again, since moving here as a community, we talk about a different way of life so much more. And I'm really interested to know your thoughts as to why you think that is. Why are we so open in the queer community about different relationships and different ways of being that kind of, I guess, step away from the standard, this is how you should live your life?
Because we had to, right? Yeah. You know, okay. there's no clear path for us. No one told us you have to do this and this and that. And as soon as you feel like you're outside of what society tells us we should be, then we're left with figuring it out for ourselves and, you know, trying to, you know, listen to other people who are, you know, a bit like us and reaching out and, you know, going along with it.
Do you all agree?
Yeah, I was going to say pretty much exactly the same thing. Like, we're told that we're not normal, so what's the point in following anything that's normal?
Yeah.
Okay. And it's not like they present it as desirable anyway. They're always, like, making jokes about the old ball and chain and we're going to get married and I'm going to be in a prison. And you're just like, you're not exactly, you know, making a clear case for yourself.
Or selling it, yeah. It's so true. And actually, it's funny because, again, I think about people that I've known in the past and some of them are just totally miserable. And you just think, why aren't you having these conversations? And, you know, they're like, you know, the wife's going, oh, yeah, I'm really happy in this situation. And the husband is just like bursting to get out and live his life. And, you know, do you think, I mean, you think like divorce rates and kind of like affairs are so high. I mean, this is probably a really question to ask you, Silver. So, but actually, if people did have more open conversations and talked about different ways of having a relationship, do we think that actually there'd be less of that? You know, would people actually stay together because they're fulfilled in their relationships?
Yes, absolutely. And the reason why, you know, a lot of there's so much cheating and divorce is because when you are told this is your path and this is what you have to do, you basically go on autopilot. You don't question things. You don't think for yourself. What do I need? What do I want? And so you think, I'm just going to do what everyone else is telling me what to do. Mm-hmm. So when I see couples who are, or people in relationships who are having trouble, often I ask them, how did they choose to be together? And sometimes they just don't remember because they never really ask themselves, how do I choose you? Mm. And how and what are the needs that are being met with me?
What do I have? What
yes,
do I need?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And often they, you know, really important conversations like, oh, actually, what does monogamy mean for us? We're never had. So then people assume that monogamy is the same for me that it is for your partner. And then that's when things go wrong. But also when people think that there's no other ways, that if you're outside of monogamy is about being weird, then you're trying to stay in it. And what you do instead is do it behind your partner's back and meet. Yeah. And that's just terrible for everybody, really.
And then it comes the guilt, the shame, and
yes,
all the other stuff
exactly.
That kind of makes more of a kind
yes,
of emotional
rather breakdown. Than having a conversation about it and talking about,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
How can we, you know, be together and how we choose each other.
Mm. One thing I will say, I know it's like we're speaking about that we're going against the norms of a relationship and, you know, be with someone and grow up and ball and chain and all of that type of stuff. I will say that something I've noticed is that there's now a weird shift of an expectation of a queer relationship to go open or to involve someone else, especially with gay men, that we're now following this weird precedence that's been set out in front of us, that it's like, oh, you've been together 3 years, so when are you going to be open? Do you know what I mean? Like that type of thing is now, we've now come to this side of it where we're like, oh, we're going to go so far away from it that we're going to set our own rules that now we want everyone to follow.
Yeah.
So there's a weird thing happening there that I just kind of wanted to throw the spanner out there. Bye.
I guess the question to follow that up, Harry, is when are you going to be open? I'm only joking. But I think, you know, this is, it's sorry. It is really interesting though, because I think that, you know, any type of relationship that we have, there's no real guide. I think we all just kind of work it out, don't we? We, you know, I think we grow up, I came out at 19 and then I was like, right, now I've become this person. I had no concept or clue. And I don't think that's just, you know, relevant to our community. I think there's so many communities out there that, you know, you grow up and there's expectations. So how do we provide better education to people to say they've got options and actually they can choose the life they want? Because I do worry about this kind of expectation that is set for people. And it's like, well, this is just the only path that you have. And I think I agree with your point there. You know, it's that, you know, it's not a one size fits all type situation, but actually people need to know there are options and they don't need to conform to other ways of kind of living. So
yeah, but I think what we're talking about is the conformity that happens, like the gay conformity. And,
yes.
And as soon as you have something to conform to, that's when you become in trouble, really, because then you feel like you have to fit in something.
Yes.
And actually, as human beings, we're all diverse, whether we're monogamous, heterosexual, queer, you know, there is no one conformity. So yeah. Either way, it's not good.
And I think you can see that in the fact that even now where queer relationships have the possibility for stability that has never been there before, you know, legally, culturally, all that kind of stuff. On the other hand, I feel like the fact of, you know, open relationships, polyamory, all that kind of stuff is now something that enters the mainstream in general a lot more, that, you know, you hear more straight couples talking about it, contemplating it, and in that sense, I suppose, it's maybe a thing of just listening and seeing, you know, what has been, you know, tried by some people, where you're like, oh, well, that is a gay couple that is trying this particular form of relationship, and how does that apply to my own life? It's quite an interesting dynamic that's happening at the moment that I sort of see sometimes in I guess, mainstream culture.
Yeah, I think people just need to find what type of relationship works for them, regardless of what it is. I mean, I've been in polyamorous relationship, closed relationship, and now I'm in a relationship where I'm just like, I just can't be bothered being with more than one people. I'm just like too old for this. I just don't have the energy.
It's a bit exhausting
to sustain more than one relationship. Yeah. So, you know, it's just for me, it's, you know, I'm fine with where I am, but, you know, I've been in all sorts of different relationships. But I think there just needs to be more conversation about what works for people and outside of, you know, these, you know, straight and gay cultures, of it being just a conversation. And as you said, I think it's coming into the mainstream a lot more. But I think it will struggle, because I watch a lot of reality TV, and a lot of them are very much about the whole monogamous being with one person, all this stuff, Love Island, The Ultimatum, Blind Date, like all of this stuff, which is hysterical to watch.
Is Blind Date still on?
Yeah.
Is it? Oh, I have no idea.
I think so. Oh. Oh, no, it's Blind... No. Blind Love.
Oh, on Netflix.
Love is Blind.
Love is Blind. Okay, yeah.
Absolute train wreck. Absolute train. But it really feeds into this narrative that you have to get married and have children and have a house. It's just almost like a really sort of marketing way of relationship, and how you market them and how you have to fit into this model of capitalism and all that stuff. So yeah, I think there's also a conversation to be had about there, like who's actually benefiting from people getting married.
Yeah.
Because it's essentially just a legal document, but it also ties you to the state. Like there's all sorts of...
And costs thousands and thousands of pounds.
Yeah, and it's like very, people, very expensive.
And I've seen so many people get married, like straight friends get married, and they have the biggest wedding, and it's all they focus on. And like a year later, they're like, yeah, it's not working. But they literally wanted the day. It was like they got to be the princess for the day or whatever. And
like £30,000 to get a divorce.
Yeah. It's like, you know, you could buy a house with that. That's kind of crazy. Well, not really, but a deposit anyway. Harry, one thing that strikes me is around the relationship we have with ourselves. And I think that we all, whether this is, you know, platonic relationships with people or romantic or sexual, there is something about getting to know you as a person. Not that you need to get to know you as a person, but I think we, but I think that we all, I kind of feel like my personal view on this is that sometimes the relationship with ourselves is like the last on the list. And I wondered what your thoughts were on that.
I do agree to an extent. Speaking from personal experience, no, I love myself too much. Like, I'm far too obsessed with myself to put myself last. But I do agree, like, let's be honest, there's friends in the audience, they can agree with me. I think that in the vast majority, yes, I think people are too focused on how they're perceived, how many followers they've got, what they look like and what they dress like, that they don't really actually focus on what truly makes them happy. So I think that, it's something that people, it's a daily thing. It's a daily fight. I think if you don't truly actually love yourself, then something I did from somebody that struggled with, we won't get into it, but bits and pieces, was I used to like look in the mirror and pick one thing that I used to love about myself. And I'd be like, oh, I feel this way about myself, but I've got great lips that people would pay for. So I would just like, that would then turn into a daily manifestation of like things I loved about myself. And now you can't tell me anything. So legit, it's literally one of those things. So,
well, on episode one, we had Darkwa to Darkwa, and they were saying that every day you should look at yourself in the mirror and moisturize your skin and take your body in and just 100%. Look at yourself and just admire all the
dance
facets
naked.
Of you, because you are just, yeah, because you are the only person that is you.
Yeah, exactly.
What strikes me though is I think there are a lot of people that don't do what you do. So, and it's great that you recognize your wonderful lips and 100%. You know, all of that stuff.
But so you should see the other pair, but we're getting stuff. we should.
But there will be people that don't, and there'll be people that have learned to actually just avoid anything like that. So how do we promote a healthy relationship with ourselves? I'm coming to you, so as a psychotherapist here, I think you're going to have a great answer. So what would you recommend to someone in terms of wanting to get to know their own being? And, you know, because I think when you contribute towards any type of relationship, whether it's romantic, friendship, whatever, if you aren't fully on board with who you are, how does that manifest? You know, it can be quite tricky, can't it?
Yes, I agree. You know, we were talking earlier about community and being in the right city where there are people, queer people, where we can find a tribe. But in order to find a tribe, we have to learn to connect. And to learn to connect, we have to be good with ourselves, with our relationship with ourselves. And basically, my tip is exactly what you were saying, is learning to be kind to yourself, learning to talk to yourself in as your own best friend, and to look at yourself and to, you know, to look at the good stuff, the positive stuff that's about you as well. When you grow up, in the world that we live in right now, growing up queer in this heteronormative world and mononormative world and cisgenderist world, it's just pretty impossible to just become an adult and think that you're great just like that with no work for yourself, because you internalize so many messages from society that you're wrong, that you're bad, that you're not good enough, that you shouldn't exist, or all this stuff. So you have to really take a stance and to say, no, this is wrong. Society is, I'm not wrong. I'm not broken. It's society that is wrong. And so I'm going to talk to myself like I love myself.
Yeah, absolutely. Round of applause. That's great. I love that. Any other thoughts on that, and any other tips that you would have in terms of, you know, supporting yourself?
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky because, you know, I've gone through that feeling of not being okay with who I was, but then now I couldn't care less what people think about me because I'm like you, I'm quite obsessed with myself. I'm quite self-absorbed. So I think that, you know, whenever I, you know, put myself out there or put photos out there, I do stuff on social media and someone will be like, well, your nose is a bit too big. I'm just like, okay, great. Whatever. It's just like, it doesn't matter to me because I've come to a place of self-confidence. But, you know, it takes a while to get there, I think. Obviously, we've probably all gone through episodes and times in our lives where we haven't felt that. But, you know, it's just coming to terms with it and not caring what anybody else thinks, because at the end of the day, these people are not important to you. They don't mean anything to you in your life. You need to focus on the people that uplift you and give you that affirmation and you know, appreciate you for who you are. And that's what I've done. If someone doesn't appreciate me, they can fuck off.
Absolutely. What about you, Brian?
I was just going to say, no, just chiming with that. It's that old thing of, like, comparison is the thief of joy. Like, the, you know, most of the time, if you muddle along and do what matters to you and do who matters to you and all that kind of thing, then you, thank you, then you usually find a nice kind of equilibrium. And it's when you start saying, oh, I'm doing it wrong because they are doing it so right, is that when you start to be harder on yourself and all that kind of thing. So, yeah.
Do you think it's all been, was it an easy journey for you all in terms of getting to this point, do you think? I mean, how long did it take you from discovery of who you were to, you know, now, in terms of feeling more liberated and feeling like you had better relationships with your own selves?
It's ongoing, isn't it? It kind of, like, it's not, well, I can't speak for anyone else, but I wouldn't ever say that someone's like, great, finish line, I'm done.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I've transcended, and I certainly wouldn't be at that point. I think it's just, it's ongoing, isn't it?
Ongoing piece, yeah, absolutely. So, Ulga, we were talked about the show before when we were talking about you coming on as a guest, and you kindly wrote something for the press release. Can you remember what you wrote? Probably not. You've been writing a lot, haven't you?
Cannot, for the life of me, remember what I wrote.
So you wrote this, and it really moved me, and I want to talk to you about it. So you talked about when it comes to trans people and relationships. So often painted as, like, pictures of disgust or seen as undesirable commodities and sexualized. And I wondered if you'd be happy to share whether you felt that was your experience when you came out, or is it just something that you've kind of observed within the community from your work that you do with My Generation?
I mean, it has been sort of especially when I sort of first came out, I noticed the whole sort of fetishization of trans women in particular by particular groups of people. And I used to get all these like weird messages from like men who were like, I went to Thailand and I had a great time. Would you like to meet up? And I was like, what are you talking about? And then they went to Thailand and met a bunch of trans women. And now they came back and they want to meet an Icelandic trans woman. I'm like, go fuck off. And it's just like all of these sort of like weird things that people would do and say. And they obviously didn't see me as a person. They saw me as some sort of an experience or something exotic to try out and be like, oh, I've never tried that before. And, you know, it's like, well, obviously you haven't because we haven't slept together. So, but it's just really, really bizarre. It's sort of stuff like that. And I think on the flip side, you then have the people that will say that trans people are disgusting and undesirable. And even the people that do secretly long, you know, to be with a trans person will also show that extreme hatred and disgust towards them. I mean, there's a thing called the trans panic defense, which is a piece of law in some countries where if someone, you know, violently attacks a trans person who has a partner and they say, oh, I panicked because they're trans, they wouldn't get a sentence and it wouldn't be as, you know, it's just, it's so ingrained in our society that it's okay to treat trans people like trash. And I think that's, you know, where it comes from. And I think that's really, really tricky thing to be almost a commodity and then also an object of disgust. And we see this in the media and TV shows and films all the time. I think, what was it, The Hangover or something? A movie where this guy sleeps with a trans woman and it's like a running joke throughout the whole film that he slept with a trans woman. And it's just like, it's just really, really frustrating. And then you also have people who are like claiming that trans people are trying to force everyone to sleep with them. And you're just like, babes, we don't want you. And they're like, well, I would never sleep with a trans person. And it's like, great, we don't want to sleep with you either. So it's just a really complicated relationship. And I think, you know, I'm with a trans person now. And I think that's, you know, one of the best relationships I've had because we don't have any of that bullshit. And we don't have any of that, you know, I've dated all sorts of people. And I think especially cisgender men will often have like almost an identity crisis that they're dating a trans person. They're like, oh, does that mean I'm bisexual or I'm not straight? And you're like, okay, goodbye. I don't have time to go through identity crisis with you. I want you to have your own confidence to do this. If you don't, goodbye.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's about finding people who are just at ease with who they are and not having to educate a person you're trying to be with.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Well, I watched, and I'd really recommend everyone watching this. So Ewan Fox did a TED Talk, and it's on YouTube, and it's incredible, and it's really, really beautiful. And you talk about your relationship and finding each other and finding love, you know, as a trans couple. And what I took from that was that it's so many possibilities for people to be able to see something positive reflected back rather than the narrative that you're talking about now. So how important is that to you to be able to make work like that and have those conversations?
I think it's because, as I was saying, we're taught so strongly by society that, you know, we're disgusting and our bodies are different and undesirable. And just having people who are, you know, positive about you being trans. When Fox and I got together, we had no clue what type of bodies we had underneath our clothes. And we just got together and it was great. And we didn't have any expectations. But that was because we were in a space. We were in a big conference where there was loads of trans people and we knew it was a safe space and we just didn't care. And that was a very freeing experience not to have to care about any of these things. Because as a trans person in the dating world, you know, you're constantly worried about a number of things. But when Fox and I got together, we were at a conference, everybody's trans, no one cares, and we didn't have to worry about any of these things. So I think seeing someone so confident in their own body and who they are and just seeing that as a positive experience is incredibly important.
Yeah, absolutely. That's amazing. Fantastic. Brian, thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate it. Brian, I was really lucky to read your book before it was released this year, and it's on sale today, everyone. So if you like, there's only about 4 copies, so you have to fight over them. But it's called Sounds Like Fun, and it's an incredible, incredible book. And what's that, sorry? And it talks about the relationship of Owen and Rich. And after some time together, and something we mentioned earlier, they explore an open relationship. I think Rich approaches Owen and says, have you thought about this? Was it the other way around?
Yeah.
And I think this is something that's quite common within the community. And it's something that Harry was mentioning earlier. So what prompted you to write this book and tell this story?
I think it kind of all of the conversations we've been having so far have been on my mind. And I was interested in a couple at a moment of kind of crisis and change in their relationship, because I some of my favorite novels are about a relationship and about, you know, a moment in time in a relationship, but really it's a filter through which you can the author explores a main character. So like Nora Ephron's Heartburn is a big influence on me and is about a woman who discovers that her husband has been having an affair and she is pregnant. And it's this distillation of 6 weeks, but it's the distillation of the woman's whole life. And I kind of wanted to find something that was less sort of done than the affair and the kind of, you know, sort of traditional couple like that. And I was also interested in the dynamic of Owen, our main character, being a reluctant at first participant in this open relationship, and then spending the book picking apart why were you reluctant to begin with, and also why did you agree with it? Why not sort of say, no, I'm going to put my foot down on this? And I just thought as well that you know that sort of that initial stage of a relationship developing gives you the opportunity for sort of having all the fun bits of a romantic comedy, like a series of, you know, misadventures and random dates and random hookups and disastrous ones and good ones. But then you also get the kind of the drama of a long-term relationship and what, you know, that kind of more subtle drama and stuff like that. And then, yeah, I just thought there was space for jokes in it as well. So I put them in.
It was one of those books where it was like, typical Sunday afternoon, sit down, cozy blanket, reading it and getting lost in it. I absolutely loved it. It was so, so good. One thing that really struck me was the power dynamic between the two people. So Rich was portrayed as this really kind of confident person who, you know, knew what he wanted. And, you know, so there's a fly that keeps coming to my face. That knew what he wanted and, you know, really set on making this happen. Whereas Owen was a bit more kind of reluctant. And it really struck me as this whole power imbalance. And I guess this is probably quite common in a lot of relationships. I'm looking at Silver again here as well. Do you think this is common? And was there a purpose for you type writing that? Is it something that for your own experiences or something you'd seen that you thought, okay, this needs to be part of that discussion? Because I guess it's the dynamic was they were going to try this relationship, but actually, as you said, they weren't completely on the same page.
Yeah, and I suppose part of that also came from, again, linking to what we were speaking about earlier to do with community. One of the things that gives Rich, one half of this couple, the sort of, I suppose, status and the kind of confidence is that he is very much enmeshed in a community. The book is set in London and he is a Londoner and he has, you know, uni friends, he has childhood friends, he has work colleagues, he has all of that. And Owen is a Dubliner who has moved to London and moved for this relationship. And he doesn't have that community and he hasn't gone seeking one either because he just decided to put, you know, all his chips on this relationship. And that was, again, something I was interested in teasing out and what, you know, yeah, different types of dislocation do to us, you know, and how that can change and how, you know, not to get too deep into the book, but one of the nature of opening the relationship is that now Owen has this totally new, I suppose, prism through which he can look at connecting with people. That was kind of what I was trying to pick apart with that power dynamic or status dynamic, however you want to phrase it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but do you think that's quite common in relationships generally, the whole power dynamic and one person feeling less than or one person kind of taking the lead on the relationship?
Yes, absolutely. There is feeling less than and is being less than. And I think there's difference here. I think a lot of the time we think that we have to be equal to our partners all the time in order to be in a good relationship. But equality sometimes is not possible if one person has a bigger strength in one thing and not in another thing. And so they will take the lead on one thing and not other things. I think it's okay too. I think what's the key here is to be fair with everyone. And so if somebody, for example, is, the main breadwinner because they love their job or because their career is exciting and the other one isn't, it doesn't mean there's necessarily a problem, but it needs to be talking about it. And the person that doesn't earn the money might feel less than, but actually if they talk about it and they contribute in other ways, the relationship can still be fair and equal. And I think with the story that you have, it's a major compromise and a big risk to move countries for somebody else. And so when you do that, originally, a lot of people would think of everything's going to be fun and everything's going to be great. And actually they realize, oh, wow, it's actually not as fun as I thought it was going to be because there's so many things I have to learn when I'm in a different country, a different city. And one of the things with relationships as well is to be able to learn to understand what it's like for the other person, to put yourself in the other person's person's shoes. The person who's always been a Londoner, of course, is not going to have the same experience at all from the person who comes from Dublin. And so those are also conversations that needs to be had and to enjoy the similarities that we have with our partners, but also accepting the differences.
Yeah, individuality, I guess. Yes.
I'm just loving my fictional couple being given like a counselling session. I need to write the alternate version where they get this chat.
Yeah, this is like part two, the therapy session. Yeah. Amazing. We've talked about different types of relationships and positive and compromising relationships and all that kind of stuff. But I would like to know whether any of you have had any romantic, platonic, sexual relationships where it's just been dysfunctional and you've had to make brave decisions to have difficult conversations, because that's the thing that I think that as humans sometimes we can struggle with. Sometimes we have friendships that go on for years and years and years and they don't serve us because the person is an asshole, or you know, you've just not enjoyed it, but actually you keep it going because that's what you know. I've got a list. I wonder if any of you have had the same experiences and how you tackle those, because I think that's something maybe we don't talk about often, and we have this guilt of knowing someone for such a long period of time and going, well, I can't relinquish our friendship. We've been friends for 20 years. But actually sometimes it's like the most freeing thing. Harry's done this before. I can see by the smirk on his face.
I have no issue cutting people off at all. I have no issue whatsoever. Call it, I'm a Capricorn, like call it a star sign thing. Like I just think, if you were eating some dinner and you didn't like it, would you carry on eating it? No.
Depends so how much
you,
it was.
No, girl.
Some
no,
people
you
would.
Not, you would not. If like if that friendship is not benefiting you, well, that relationship, what's the goddamn point?
Yeah.
Like, I just, for me, I just don't see any point in doing it. Like, why would you continue paying to a gym subscription if you're not going to go? Like, I can use all these analogies and
I've done that as well.
Well, and this is me. No, cut it off. You're like, no, I've done that too. Yeah, to me, I'm just, I have no issue just cutting things off. If I get that hint or, you know, you can give it a try for a little bit and you can say, okay, maybe it was just this one time, like fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice, whatever that saying is. That, like, I have no issue cutting people off, like, at all, and I don't feel any guilt. In fact, it gives me a bit of a thrill. I'm like, cool, done with you, moving on. Like,
do
I just
you
don't...
ghost, or do you kind of have the conversation?
Oh, no, girl, it's like full block. You are out of my life, like, it's done. You don't need to see what I'm doing. Like, you're dead to me. Like, it's very that. Like, yeah. It's done. Like, I have no issue with it at all. Like, whatever. In the same way that, like, if somebody was, like, on the street disrespecting you, you would just either call them out, or you would just... they'd go past and they're nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
So why do you put up with it just because you've been friends for 20 years?
20 years, yeah.
Yeah, I have this thing as well with like family. I know we spoke about family earlier, but like you just because you're born into a family, you don't have to like them. Like sometimes your family, well, it's true, but sometimes your family, they're a bit of a knob, aren't they? Like, you know what I mean? Like just we're all, you don't have to have these loyalties because of circumstances. Like just... fuck them, cut them
well, it's
out.
Conditioning, isn't it? And I think when you start to find your own voice, it becomes easier to just... I think what I found in my life is when I started to say no, I couldn't stop. It's you know, and it's like the more you kind of, you please people, and then eventually you kind of go, no, absolutely not, I'm just not doing it. And then and eventually, like, you know, everyone that you knew is kind of gone, but it's okay. We're still strong. What about you, Brian? It's just the till machine, don't worry.
I'm a big believer in the kind of the, I guess the, a fundamental transformation of a relationship. There's, you know, like if a friendship has been this incredibly intense, for example, like, you know, reliance sort of relationship, I think that there can often be a beauty to that friendship turning into a thing where like, oh, I only see them in group dynamics now, you know, or like, or I see them twice a year, as opposed to the times when we like, you know, would spend weeks on end together.
You dread that though? Because like some, I've done that. And then you get to the point where you're like, oh, next month we've got that appointment. And then you get to the week before, you're like, oh, I've got the next week. And
I think if that's the case, then it just fizzles itself out anyway. Like, I think that it just dies by degrees. Whereas, you know, like seeing in myself and seeing in friends there, like, I think if it can happen, if it can be a thing where what wasn't wrong was the fundamental dynamic, but, you know, the regularity of seeing each other or a particular thing influenced by circumstances of, you know, work, location, what have you, then that change can actually be quite, I think can be quite beautiful. And I love seeing it in, you know, friends or in the odd time when there's, you know, obviously the cliche at the end of like, you know, a romantic relationship is often, I think we should be friends. But if you see people who do manage that, it's actually, it can sometimes be kind of wonderful to see and it can be wonderful to experience. So, I mean, I'm going to say anecdotally, it's like, it you know, it can happen.
We're going to get Silver to do a psychoanalysis on you in the interval. No, I think you're right though, because actually it doesn't always have to be dramatic. If you're adult and you can have, it does with Harry, but if you have conversations where you can be respectful, it can be honouring of what you've had with the friendship or whatever. I mean, I had a situation where... she won't listen to this, so it's fine. I had a situation where I had a friend for a long, long time and we were talking loads about her timber rot in her barn conversion. It was very straight and boring and I was just... it went on for hours. And then I told her that day that my auntie died of COVID and she sent me an emoji with a tear. And I was like, yeah, done. It's like, you know, if you're sending an emoji when someone's died of COVID, we're not doing it anymore. That's it. So that was a cutout situation and that felt very, very freeing. And actually, she'd pissed me off for a long time. So it was one of those situations. It was one of those situations where it was a bit like, oh, we're seeing them again, blah, 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 blah. But like, you know, that was just a bit.
That's clean.
That was brutal, quite honestly. But so yeah, that was one of those situations that I'd agree with with Harry. But there's other situations where if you can honour the friendship, I think that's a nice thing. Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah.
I think that if you want to transform a relationship that's have issues, you have to sometimes have the really tough, hard, uncomfortable conversations to get there. And I mean, of course, if somebody does something really unacceptable, it's a cut out straight away. But I think a lot of people don't change and endure relationships that they don't like because they are afraid to, or they don't know how to have those really tough, hard conversations. And also, I think that people don't like change as well. So even though they want change, they are afraid of change because they don't know what's going to happen next. And I also think that sometimes if you want to, if you think actually maybe transformation is not possible and I want to let go of people, there's something deeper that goes on in some people that sometimes people have to really experience a very deep sense of grief because they have to stop hoping that something will be different. And the stopping hoping for something to be different is really sad and it goes quite deep.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard. Change is difficult and it's you know, it's grief, isn't it? It's an ending. Sometimes relationships can be really, really difficult. Harry, you are a fabulous queen on the drag circuit. And I'm really interested to know how Mary O'Carr, your alter ego, has enhanced your relationship with yourself. So do you think that by being a drag queen, you have actually got to understand different facets of your own personality more and therefore have a more intimate relationship with who you are?
Yes, I would say, like, if anybody's ever done drag or dabbled in drag or anything like that, like the second that you put it on, and you're fully invested, you just feel this power and you're suddenly alive. You're suddenly like, I mean, it's on brand because Mario Kart, for those of you who don't know, popular video game based on a Nintendo Mario Kart. So I kind of keep it like it's Mario on his super mushroom. He's the same person. He's just heightened. So that's how I feel. And it's taken like a while for me to kind of realize like I can have that 24/7. Like that's just because I've got 3 inches of foundation, everything's put away, and you know, however many pairs of tights and all of that, like that power is still accessible, and just lashes don't make of a man. It's I can have that exactly without all of that on. So I would say that by doing drag, I've kind of discovered the more of a diva than I ever thought I was out of drag. Which can you believe? But yeah, I would say that that's something that I have discovered through doing that. Like it's just a power that's always accessible just because it's got a wig on. It doesn't change who I am. It's just there.
Does it like lift you up if you're having a down day? Do you, is there something you can tap into to kind of like pull you up through difficult situations or?
Yeah. I go and admire my gorgeous garments and I'm like, oh, stunning.
Your dressing room is fabulous.
Yeah. Thank you. It's very cool. you do. You just kind of, You put on a song that you listen to or that you do in your set and you sing it in the shower, whether you're doing whatever, and you're just like, oh, that's there it is. There it is.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's something that you can just readily tap into when you need to, that can help bring you up 100%. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. One thing I'm interested to know from all of you is what you think a healthy relationship looks like. If you were to describe that to someone else, and it can be any type of relationship, but what do you think a healthy relationship looks like?
For me, I would say a healthy relationship is just seeing two people. Are we talking romantic?
Could be romantic, platonic, okay. Sexual, whatever.
I'll speak on romantic or okay. Like as partners. I think to see people that are truly happy are people that truly support and love each other's success independent of each other. They don't have to be united all the time. You can see the ups, you can see the downs, you can see all of that. To me, that is a truly happy relationship where you can see the black and white and the gray and the rainbow and every other color in that. You can see it. It's not just a, we're going to sit here and have our wine together, darling, and we're amazing. It's not that. It's not cute. Like, have
warts
a go
and
at
all.
Each other.
It's basically every
situation. Then
every
I'm like,
situation.
Oh, now I believe it. Now I believe that's what you are actually.
Yeah.
You know, you're not putting on a front, basically. That's for me.
Yeah, that makes sense. Brian?
I think the word that came to my mind was like heard, being heard. Like when two people can really hear each other and like, because you can nod and listen to a lot of people, but like if you can really hear someone when they're, you know, maybe not even articulating what they really need to say, and you know, you can rely on someone to hear that in you, I think that that's quite, yeah, that certainly is something that makes for, a really empowering, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm just very aware that I was really emphasizing my nod when you said that. I was like, really nodding, as you're saying about nodding. But no, I agree. Hearing each other is really, really important. Listening to, you know, other people's points of view and, you know, understanding each other and letting people have, even if you don't agree with something, letting people have a voice and be opening or open to a conversation. I think that's really, really important. Silva?
Well, I totally agree with you both, and I don't think I've got any more to add, really. But I would just like
something.
Well, I'll summarize it with respect. I think this is really what you're both saying in lots of words, but really it comes down with respect. But everything that you said is completely, totally agree with. But we have to be able to just be there and, you know,
yeah,
liking each other and respecting the difference and independent, you know, independent success and hearing each other and so on.
Yeah.
I think for me, like, a healthy relationship is quite easygoing, something that doesn't feel like an effort, something that you don't have to constantly, mm-hmm. you know, try to make work. If you're constantly going through that struggle, then it's just not really healthy for you because you're trying something so hard that obviously isn't working. So for me, like, a healthy one is something that's easygoing. We know each other. We're honest with each other. So it's something we can speak to each other. We communicate about it. But, you know, there's never that element of having to work really hard for it. Because if I have to work really hard for a relationship, I'm a Capricorn as well. So if someone just does, you know, if someone's really difficult, I'm just very good at just removing myself.
Switching off.
So, yeah, and it's not like I haven't had huge, like, breakups with people or huge instances. It's more just that I've just kind of removed myself.
Do you think you get less tolerant with certain relationships, especially like friendships as you get older? Because I definitely feel that.
Yeah. I'm very picky.
Yeah. You become a bit more like, no, this doesn't feel right, or,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I'm very particular. If there's something I don't like, I'm like, no.
Good luck to you.
Yeah.
Do you all agree?
Yeah.
Nodding. Okay.
I think we should really choose our people very carefully, right?
Because the people in your life will influence how you feel about yourself. So it's very, very important. Yeah. Okay. So we are going to have a reading now from Brian for his fabulous book, Sounds Like Fun. And and then we're going to take an interval and then come back for an audience Q&A. So if you're ready, I'd love to hand it over to you.
Sure. This is from towards the start of the book when Rich has just introduced the idea to Owen of them having an open relationship and kind of tying into what we were talking about near the start about, like, the importance of platonic relationships. This is a book that's mainly about romantic relationships and variations thereupon. But the other big love story in it for me is the kind of the friendship that Owen has with his friend Jax. So that's he's gone to Jax to sort of get her advice on all of this. And the only other thing that you need to know about this extract is that she is a crafter. So she is doing some embroidery. Owen, she says, I only have an hour till I have to go. What's wrong with you? I looked at Jax's sewing basket, at the threads and needles and the cuddly rhino that was acting as a pincushion, and my eyes misted over. You said it was something to do with Rich, Jax said. She continued stitching, seemingly absorbed by her work, though I knew she'd put it down if I let the tears flow. I took a breath and tried to find a way of putting it that didn't sound blunt and slightly absurd. There wasn't one. He wants an open relationship? Jax looked up, one hand on the wooden frame and the other raised, string taut. Rich wants an open relationship. Yeah? Right. She blinked, seeming genuinely confused. I didn't think he had it in him. What do you mean? I asked. Well, Rich is just quite careery, quite, boring. Sorry, she put down the hoop. I'm really fucking this up. I wondered, for the first time in years, what Jax actually thought of Rich. They probably saw each other just a handful of times a year for events like my birthday, but I'd always assumed she shared my opinion of how wonderful he was. How are you feeling? She asked. I fiddled with the drawers in an upcycled apothecary cabinet while I tried to think of an answer, but found I couldn't or didn't want to describe to Jax the thoughts I was having. They seemed too personal to share, even with her. Rich wanted to kiss other guys, touch other guys, fuck other guys. He wanted to have sex, but not with me. After 5 years together, he wanted more than our relationship gave him. I feel like a bit of a failure, I said eventually. It feels a lot like this is a sign that I'm a failure as a boyfriend and a partner. Jax was shaking her head, but I went on. Like, if I wasn't enough, if I was enough, he wouldn't want my permission to go off with someone else. If your relationship was a failure, Jack said, he'd have gone off with someone else already. I mean, she added quickly, spotting that I looked ready to throw up. I'm sure he hasn't, Owen. I mean, he didn't say he had, did he? I didn't ask. I was feeling a bit dizzy.
It's a seriously good book. I really, really enjoyed it. So there's a few copies here for sale today. And if you don't buy one, please order it online because it's absolutely incredible. So thank you all very much for the first half. This is an incredible conversation. We're going to have an interval now. I'm going to sell some books, get a glass of wine, and then we'll come back for an audience Q&A. So big round of applause for my guests. The conversation doesn't stop here. Check out the next part of this podcast episode on your streaming platform. You will not be disappointed. I really hope you enjoyed the show. A big thank you once again to all my guests. Please share the podcast, give it a 5-star review if you'd like, and leave any comments you may have. You can also follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok for all the latest updates on Queer I Am, the podcast. Also, check out my website, www.fluiactually.com. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.